You're listening to One Call Away Podcast. This is Tahi Michelle, working in the fashion industry as a model based in New York City. I've been maintaining tons of relationships with photographers, models, makeup artists, and influencers through DMs, dropping comments, and reacting to Instagram stories. And honestly, I've been craving just a little more than our online friend is. So I decided to ditch the DMs and call them up. These are people that I've worked with maybe once, chatted with twice, or I've never met at all. I'm breaking out of my comfort zone to have real conversations with people I see every day on my phone screen. People who I admire and look up to, but most of all, share those human experiences that we all can relate to. Today's guest is LaToya Shante Snell, aka the Running Fat Chef. LaToya is a chef, journalist, speaker, activist, multi-sport athlete, ultra runner, mental health advocate, and such an inspiring influencer representing people in the BIPOC community, the queer community, and those living with disabilities. LaToya prides herself in being, as she states it, a fit, fat athlete with a potty mouth and a big heart. I met LaToya at a photo shoot over a year ago, and we've been following each other ever since. And as I already anticipated with this one, it's going to be a two-part series, so make sure to keep your eye out for part two. We'll be chatting about knowing your balance and worth, honoring your personal truth while building a brand, and our mutually complicated relationships with our fathers. Find LaToya at IamLShante on Instagram. I met you through my photographer friend. I was hired for a job and you were there at the shoot location with your son. And I just got to get to know your family firsthand at that shoot, just like randomly out of nowhere. And I fell in love. Like, it was like a love at first sight. I was like, this family is just like everything I wish I like grew up with.
Oh, I love it.
So thank you for giving me that experience. But ever since then, we've just kept in touch and I've just been loving following you on social media. I just genuinely am inspired by you. This is a chance for us to take that relationship off of social media and just get to know each other a bit.
Absolutely.
So with you having such a big presence on social media, you just got verified. Congratulations.
Yes.
So for you, I know that you are very vulnerable already on these social platforms, but is there anything that you try to keep to yourself and not share with the public?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. One of the things that I do try to keep offline is remembering to respect my son's privacy as well as my husband's privacy, because the people tend to think that's like a package deal that my husband and son now are automatically thrown into this space. Sometimes people feel the need to ask certain questions. What school is your son going to? And if I see your husband, he gives me that same energy. And I have to remind people that they're individuals. They're just as much as I am. One of the things that I heavily advocate for online is to practice boundaries. And I practice those boundaries with my family. And on a personal note, knowing when to actually log off. Not just because I might feel overwhelmed or burnt out, but there are certain moments that I just do not want to share online that I really want to hold on for myself. And that's moments like hanging out with my little sister, friends who may be doctors and lawyers or people who are just not interested in putting parts of their everyday life on full display. I try to respect their own personal space and boundaries.
Totally. And just to get some context, how did you start building that social media presence? Like how long have you been doing this?
Oh man, I did this during the MySpace days, which might date me. Like MySpace was dope and we're not gonna pretend like it wasn't dope at its time. My following started to grow slowly through MySpace doing open mic poetry. You start to learn that there's a difference between the artist and the individual, because I'm like, wow, I'm intrigued with the way that this person speaks and articulate themselves. And then you get to sit down with the actual performer and it's, oh, this guy's a douchebag. Like, and you start to learn what that illusion of public eye is versus almost like being a method actor or a stage performer, that you have to respect the layers of the human being, that you may lose an idea of who the person is. So when I started getting the following through open mics, I was like, how can I show them so many layers of me, so much so that I didn't know what balance. And then I ended up leaving open mics and I was like, all right, that's not for me. And next thing I know, 2013, I can't make this up. I woke up one day and instead of poking fun at myself, at my body image, because I gained a lot of weight, I literally went from 97 pounds to being 200 plus. And I wasn't used to that. By this point, I have my son is under 10, just because I don't want to do the math right now. And under 10, and kids are like ridiculously brutal and honest, and they don't really have the intention of really hurting your feelings. But sometimes your children can bring about the reality that everyone else whisper around you. So here I am in this room, I'm looking at this reflection, and I'm just like, okay, I'm naked, and my son walks in and he says, "Mommy, you have a happy face on you." And I'm just like, "What are you talking about?" And he points to my breasts, my areola, and he says, "Two eyes, a nose," talking about one of my fat folds, "and a mouth," and he's talking about my belly button. And he's, "Look, it's always smiling." So now I'm making fun of it while I'm standing in front of him, because that's what moms do. And when he walked, I just crumbled. I was just like, whoa, like, oh, my body, a happy face. And I realized that it almost was metaphorical for how others started to see me at that stage. At that point in my life, I started watering myself down. Instead of taking up space, I tried to find a way to insert myself through humor, through laughing at a lot of things. And that was like one of the first days that I went into the mirror and I was just like, I can't laugh at this. I can't make any more jokes about this. I don't like the way I look. I don't like the way I feel. I don't like the way that I talk. How did I get here? And I used my social media platform, initially through Facebook, with documenting what was a weight loss journey. And I know that's like a curse word right now. Like right now, like, you don't say weight loss. And I am not here to promote diet culture, but I'm also not here to tell someone that if you want to lose 50 pounds and that makes you feel happy, or if that's going to help your health, if that's what's going to keep you around, you do what you got to do. So I started off my journey May 28, 2013. Documenting it online, not thinking I was going to have 60,000 followers from all over that was going to go Google Gaga off of the way that I worked out. And in turn, like the first 2 years, I started getting acknowledged in the running community as this athlete who lost 100 pounds within 6 months. And people were just like, "Wow, you look amazing." And then the comments started to vary into, "Wow, you look so much better that you lost weight, and you look like a fat freak before." That was the way I interpreted it in my head. I was just like, whoa, okay, I don't think I look that terrible. And then as I started losing more weight, I started losing energy. I embarked into what I would like to give people a trigger warning about, is I embarked into an eating disorder by 2015 by getting some really terrible advice that runners don't look like you, which meant being 5'3", not acknowledging that I have a natural muscular frame, and I was probably no more than about 175 pounds, which honestly is not plus size when I was a size 8. But I allowed someone who I considered as a close friend to give me nutrition advice, to give me fitness advice, and essentially told me to go running 25 to 40 miles a week and only eat 1200 calories. And I fell into this trap, this downward spiral, where I woke up and I was just like, I feel miserable. I don't feel like I love myself. I'm never going to look like an athlete while doing athletic things. And
wow.
Next thing I knew, I was there. So when I had the reality check in April 2015, I was on my way to work. I was still like a baby influencer, but I definitely was not intending on being an influencer. I passed out on my way to work, and the doctor diagnosed me with anorexia nervosa. And I was just like, people like me don't have that. Look at me. I'm fat. That's literally how I looked at myself. I'm like, I'm fat. How dare someone tell me that I have this? And I took a second look, and all of the symptoms, I was textbook. I was just like,
wow,
yeah, actually you are. The actions that you are taking up, yes, these are characteristics. I changed my entire mantra and the way and why I moved. And by 2017, because I started speaking up for myself, next thing I knew, I had this growing following that came out of nowhere that just would not leave. They're like, "Oh my God, you're super inspiring. Thank you so much for speaking up about your personal truth." I basically became viral from an article that I wrote for TheRoot.com about being heckled at the New York City Marathon. I had so many articles that trickle from it, people who were equally outraged at this that happened to me. And all of these letters started pouring in. And my honesty essentially became like somebody else's metaphorical, I've been through this too, and we're still going to make it. And I was just like, I don't want that role. I'm not looking for that leadership role. It actually scared me because I just thought it was going to be an article that was going to, I was going to get paid $200 for. I'm comfortable writing on my little blog. Let me stay there. Let me stay in my corner. I did not look to be anybody's vision board goals or social media goals or a hashtag. Mm-hmm. And the reality of it is that you don't have control over that narrative when you put out good things into the world. Next thing I knew, I started getting sponsorships. I started taking this on full time, and I asked myself, what can I do with this newfound, as my son would put it, hood famous? What can I do with this new hood fame? You know, where people are listening to what I have to say and watching me go through my ups and downs and make mistakes without apologies on here. And the next thing I knew, I just started, this is what I want to turn into a brand.
How would you describe yourself as an athlete influencer today?
In this day and age, before, when people used to look at an athlete, especially an ultra runner like me, an ultra runner is basically anyone that runs over 26.2 miles, or for anyone that goes according to kilometers, 42.2 kilometers. And for me, I am a plus size, unapologetically plus size, 270 pound woman who is 5'3.5", live in Brooklyn, do not like bugs. And I decided that I was going to run in the depths of the Arizona desert to do 62.3 miles. And I was just like, granted, I don't really know too many people who actually do this. And I definitely don't really know too many ultra runners who are Black, who are queer, who are loudmouth like I am, who are athletes with disabilities. But why can't it not be me? When it comes down to seeing faces like me on advertisements, whether we're speaking about sexuality identity, we're talking about gender politics, when we're talking about racial climate or racial politics, anything of that dimension, you don't typically see a plus size, potty mouth, fat athlete, proudly standing in her own personal truth and saying, I am much more than just a runner, that I enjoy doing powerlifting, that on my free time, I like to go cycling, that in 2022, my goal is to become a half Ironman finisher, to say that my journey is not going to end there. When people are try to say things like stick to running, I'm like, I dare not to do that. Mm-hmm. With my platform, I can empower others to be great and to be more than just an athlete. In my short amount of time of being in the public eye, I've been able to tap into modeling. I've done fit modeling while plus size. I've been able to go and branch into campaigns like the Eloquii campaign that is also partnered up with Walmart. I've saw my face on a billboard in DC. I've had people send me pictures standing next to big, oh my gosh, like a New York City train that actually had the side of my face that said ultra marathoner. For me, that's huge, because these were things that I didn't even see for myself. When I think about who I was and the things that I was surrounded as a 1985 kid, I didn't have visuals that bounced back at me. The only things that I had to look at as far as being a Black woman was Essence Magazine, Jet, and Ebony. When it came down to diversity and size diversity, it was always the funny fat friend depicted in films, the person who was never being able to land a certain love interest. It was always the frumpy person. No, I want you to be bold and indigenous, bold and Asian, bold and whatever fill in the blank that you are, and be happy at it. Before you are any of these descriptors, you are yourself. You are the biggest influencer you will ever know in your lifetime. Just looking at your image bounce back at you in the mirror, you have to know that you are powerful and you are destined for greatness. But it is very hard to see that sometimes when society is constantly telling you the things that you have to change about yourself because somebody in who knows what office of the 1% of the 1% of the 1% is marketing a bunch of crap telling you that you cannot do this because of whatever reason.
Wow. For listeners, if you don't see why I'm so inspired by this woman, it's very apparent now. And I honestly, so I feel like you keep bringing up this phrase, personal truth. And I think you embody that every day in your stories. You are very honest with the topics that you choose to talk about. You like the other day, I saw your story and you posted about your 5 o'clock shadow. And I was with my friend and I was like, do you know anyone who would post this? Look at her. She's amazing. And that's the thing. You're very upfront about your personal growth and learning things about yourself, learning how to navigate this world in your own way that you experience things. And the reality is that as we grow and as we age, our personal truths shift and they change and they morph into more mature versions of ourselves. And when you're building a brand, that could be a little tricky because people get accustomed and comfortable to what your brand used to be last year or 6 months ago.
Yes, that is definitely, that's the gospel right there. And I've been hit by that. Like, what, it's hard to not get bitter sometimes thinking about how the audience that was rooting you on in 2019 may not root you on in 2020, especially in the age of cancel culture. Yes, I got people who, you know, who like me and love me for who I am until the money starts speaking. And it changes things sometimes because if you are not true to yourself while joining or partnering up with brands, and I speak heavily as an influencer, when you are partnering up with brands, it is very easy to get caught up and say, that's not typically something I would do, but for this dollar amount, maybe I can take away this layer of myself. And then another company sees the first thing that you did and they start to model it and shape it and say, oh, but she did that one thing that she doesn't typically do. Maybe I can get her to do X, Y, and Z.
So then before they kind of know it. Right. You become a diluted version of yourself.
Yeah, if you even know who you look like or what you are anymore, you go from being the person who's like me, who is the body politics activist that's telling people to love themselves at every shape, size, background, and mental capacity and able body or not able body, to, hey, here's these diet teas I'm selling you. I know they don't work, but don't worry about it. They paid me $50,000 for it. And the thing is, I get it. As a consumer, I want to believe in the person that I've been following on the screen. I heavily want to believe in them, but we never question how that person's getting their income. We're so obsessed in a day and age of social media of getting what we want and consuming what we want that it is very easy to only think of that person as a brand and not as a human anymore, which means a brand is always responsible for making their consumer happy. And if you cannot make your consumer happy, guess who just lost their consumer? That's more engagement that goes out the window because they don't believe in you anymore because they think that you, quote unquote, sold out. I lost some partners along the way because there were certain things that I did not leak out to the media, certain things that I do keep quiet about talking with companies in private and saying, hey, what's your stance on Black Lives Matter? What's your personal stance on xenophobia? And when I ask those things in private, it gets really tense. There are no cameras around. There is no social media platform to say, yeah, girl, you did that. You stood up to them. No, when you don't put those things out there that is in the comfort of an email, people have no idea of how many things that people like me have to sacrifice for every day, even down to negotiating your own rate, especially when you are part of a marginalized community. I cannot advocate enough to people to please not only know your worth as a human being, but know how to actually demand to get paid your worth. Know how to negotiate those terms for yourself. one of the biggest things that I could have ever done for myself to protect myself as a brand is hiring a lawyer, making sure that you know the difference between an LLC versus getting a trademark, because anyone can get an LLC. That's great. But let's say that you grow into a larger brand than you ever expected, and you realize that you're not trademarked. And now somebody just bought out your entire name, and they bought out your logo, and now your company is not even yours. To wake up and realize that you can't even use your own name when you speak at, you know, certain events, because your name is your trademark. It's a scary thing to wake up to. There's a lot of influencers, people who are in the entertainment industry, who have no idea. They don't understand that they might be actually signing off on their voice. They might be signing off on their rights to certain things, their intellectual property. There's just so many terrible things in this industry that I had to teach myself along the way.
So when I was freelancing as a model, I had no idea how much I was worth. And even charging $100 an hour for me felt huge, because for me, I was like, I'm just standing in front of the camera and they're just taking pictures of me for a couple hours. Like, why would I charge more than 10 bucks? But as time passes, you start to understand that this is a business, and there are tons of professional paid models. There are tons of professional paid influencers and athletes and spokespeople that have either that experience of what rates should be, or they have those mentors to guide them along the way. For freelancers who are just figuring it out right now, what would your advice be?
Utilize your network. Please utilize your network. It doesn't matter how big or small it is. If you are going to be surrounded in a room with a bunch of professionals who are living and breathing this work every day, what is wrong with asking the basic question of, hey, is it possible that you can give me an introduction to this company because I'm interested? Or if that's too much to ask someone, is it okay if I pick your brain about X, Y, and Z? Respect that not everyone is actually going to be willing to share that stuff as well. And if there are some people who are willing to share that stuff, they may not even be willing to share it for free. So respect their worth in that aspect too, because there are some people who I willingly give that information to. And there's some people who I'm like, here's my rate. I'm $250 an hour. And once you actually have that information, go into a meeting, start off with your high number. Because believe me, when you are sitting down with a brand, they have their high number, their middle number, and their low number already in mind. Even when they say, oh, so what would you charge? Try to bounce that information back at them and say, so what is the average rate that you typically charge for something of this nature? There's 10,000 people out here who can do the same job, but not everybody is you. Everyone is not you. That's your bread and butter. The things that you can do, the way that you can throw a jazz or a pizzazz on something, is not what someone else out there can offer. Do not reduce your value because you feel like there's 10,000 other people out there that you're competing with. Nobody can compete with you.
Recently, I've been reading this book called Everything is Figureoutable. Basically, she said, write down a list of, you know, maybe three things that are self-inhibiting comments that you make that stop you from moving forward with something. And one of those things I wrote down was, there are so many people who do what I do and are probably a lot better. Then she said, take all of those things in that list and cross them out, slash them out with a pen. Instead, right next to them, write down what you want to say moving forward. Right. And what I chose to say was, the main goal really is not to become this amazing millionaire model. My goal is to grow and to become a better person. And comparing myself to others' progress is not going to give me a good gauge of how well I'm doing, or give me an accurate representation of how much I'm progressing, how good of a person I'm becoming.
I agree.
My last interview was with a photographer, and a lot of times they don't really get to share who they are as people on their platforms, but they do get to share their work. So for you to have this voice as an influencer, being able to call your full-time job basically showing your life and showing what you're doing every day and speaking on things that matter to you. Did you ever think that this was something that you could do as a job?
Ooh, hell no. When I think back to my mom reaction to influencing, she was just like, who and a what? Okay, no, we're going to go and you're going to be a lawyer. You're going to be a doctor. You're going to be an accountant. No, you know what, Betty? I want you to get a civil service job because at least it's one of the few jobs that still have a pension. You need something that's stable, honey. That was the thing that my mom wanted me to do. And my dad was on the opposite end of the spectrum, where he's essentially, my dad has he had this very sketchy background where he was the greatest influence that didn't happen. And it's so hard to describe him as that way because I saw so much of my creativity and the way that I speak to people without a censor. From my dad had this power, this unique and uncanny ability to inspire people. But he also had a really bad temper where it was just like, oh, okay, that's the time to leave the house. And it was so scary to see someone so brilliant be so great at destroying themselves because he couldn't see that magic in himself. He couldn't see that worth in himself, but he could see it in everybody else in the room. He could tell you how to build a house with just 5 ingredients. He can tell you how to make the best trifle or anything. Like, it was just right. So amazing to watch him at work. But when it came down to how he treated himself and by proxy, being his family member, it was almost like we crumbled together. And that's what I see a lot of people do. Sometimes the people who give out the best advice, they don't know how to follow those airplane instructions to put the mask on yourself before you go trying to save anyone else. There's too many of us out here like that.
I definitely have a very uncannily similar sort of description of my dad. I love him. He's my dad. He and I have severed our relationship due to a lot of different reasons. But I remember this moment when I was a lot younger. I had this great friendship with my dad. And it was probably the pivotal moment where he transformed from dad to someone I didn't really know anymore. But I remember going into his bedroom and asking if I could speak with him real quick. He was like, all right. And we were cool. We always chatted like that. And I just looked at him and I was like, I just feel like you don't really see like what I see in you. And at that time, he would always kind of talk down about his job. He would always say he's a pediatrician, that he was at a free clinic physician at a lower income facility in, I believe, Philadelphia.
Right.
And so whenever he would talk about it to his friends, he would rarely talk about it, but he would say, oh, I'm a bottom feeder.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. And I just remember a lot of times that was just one example of the things that I was seeing. But I would tell him, I think you're an amazing person. Like, I spend every day with you. And I think you're incredibly smart and you're incredibly strong and you're incredibly clever. But why are you putting yourself in this kind of role? Like, why are you? Like, I wish that you could see how much you could elevate. This was when I was like maybe like 13.
Wow.
And instead of taking that conversation and trying to spin it in a positive way, I think he was offended.
Yeah.
And he basically just, he put up those walls. He decided not to allow himself to be vulnerable with me. And from that day forward, we lost that relationship altogether.
Yeah, the thing is, and I recognize it even in my own parenting practices, that sometimes parents are the biggest hypocrites you'll ever meet. And that's what I try to break the cycle in with the way that I raise my son, is to allow myself to be vulnerable. One of the hardest things to do is to show my son when I'm going through pain with my endometriosis, to show my hurt when I have some idiot on the internet that's harassed me about my weight or something they see as something that's less than, because I will not pretend like I don't feel anything. There are most days of the week I can see a hurtful comment on the internet and I'm just like, yeah, F you. I really don't care how you feel. And I will have something snarky to say back. But there are some days that I'm not that witty. I'm not that quick with it. And I'm just like, oh, this hurts. Especially when you get it in bulks or if it's someone that's close to you. And I think that's what really hits us both hard is because this is coming from loved ones, especially when it comes down to that feedback, because you're not the only vulnerable person in the room. If you are opening up that dialogue with me, there's a level of trust to be able to say these things without a worry of, oh, I'm being harshly judged. So when he says what he says, but then contradict themselves, it's just, do you not understand that you and I are basically reflections of each other? And when you say those things and you do those things, that sometimes that might be you speaking about me, because I could be one of those people that you're talking about. To essentially look at the term bottom feeder, instead of looking at himself and saying, I'm a person who received all this education and now I'm a healer. Yeah. I'm changing lives. I'm helping people push through their everyday lives. Instead of looking at the power that he has to be able to preserve life, which is a brilliant thing. It's something that it's a field that we need more people out there willing to do. I think instead he looked at it as, I have to be at this location to be honored and rewarded and regarded in this way. And it has to be a dollar amount to define my worth. And the thing is, sometimes we have to ask ourselves, what were our parents' upbringing and their belief system that got them to that place? And sometimes it's the hardest thing to do, because it's just, you just completely shut me down. And instead, I was just trying to get you to see a different perspective. And then I have to remind myself, and I say this as a person who lost their father and has been 12 years, I had to learn how to forgive my father for the things that he couldn't see from my perspective. Because to me, I looked at it as, at that time, it was just like, you just completely shut me down on anything that I did. And your response was an anger or violence or rage. And what I did not know until post-mortem was that my dad had so much of an abusive upbringing and a very manipulative upbringing from his mom, and the lack of his father being around. That was all he knew. And it doesn't make that situation, but it helps me understand him a little bit better of, I wish that we could have grown from this moment.
Yeah. Yeah. You just listened to part one of this conversation with LaToya Shante. Make sure you check out part two, and don't be afraid to give her a shout out and some love. You've just listened to One Call Away Podcast, available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts. We're ditching the DMs and taking our online relationships offline. Tune in next week for our next guests. We'll be chatting with various photographers, models, makeup artists, and influencers in the fashion and modeling industries locally here in New York City, across the country, and across the globe. Make sure to find me, Tahi Michelle, at Tahi Michelle on IG or tahimichelle.com.